Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
I jumped in because Timbaland asked me to jump in.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sataro. This is episode 159, a talk with Ms. Jade. Ms. Jade is a Philadelphia-based rapper who first came to most people's attention as a protege of Timbaland. She, along with other artists including Tweet and Bubba Sparks, were part of the producer's Beat Camp Collective. Jade also worked closely with another one of Timbaland's frequent collaborators, Missy Elliott, appearing on several of Missy's hits like Funky Fresh Dressed and Slap Slap Slap. For reasons that we'll cover in the interview, Ms. Jade's debut album Girl Interrupted, largely produced by Timbaland and featuring high-profile guests like Nelly Furtado and Jay-Z, didn't perform as well as expected. She parted ways with Timbaland and released several mixtapes that showed her rapping with an aggression and power that wasn't always there during her time in the spotlight. Ms. Jade has released a bunch of recent freestyles and is finishing up a new album entitled Beautiful Mess. We talked to her at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. To make sure that you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, make sure to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, listen to our interview with another great Philly rapper, Jedi Mind Trick's Vinny Paz, on episode 111. Also consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's a woman who's always funky, fresh dressed to impress, Ms. Jade. You know, we'll get to everything in your career, kind of from the beginning on through the freestyles and Beautiful Mess that's coming okay. up and all that. But I did want to start a bit with the record. In theory, you know, on paper at least, it seemed to be a blockbuster, right? You had Timbaland production and, right. you know, high-profile guest appearances up to and including Jay-Z and all this kind of stuff. But one of the things about it is it seems like you were pressured to make a bunch of songs that didn't really show your full talent.
Right.
Interrupted girl, represent for the whole world, making it my duty, trying to show up like they make a move me.
I can't take this dumb shit. You starting to irk me, laying all them rules down like you birthed me. Shit, you the worst beat, all try to lock me. Even got both my next door neighbors watching me. You got a problem.
You must have known that going in while it was happening. And so what was it like when it comes out and the record kind of doesn't perform the way you wanted it to? Did you kind of feel like, oh, I was worried about this all along? How did that feel?
I felt like, okay, well, it didn't do what I expected, what we expected. Let's try another way. Let's start from the ground up this time. Maybe let's start doing the mixtape circuits or, you know, come up with a little bit more lyrical things and let's try it that way.
Right.
I mean, because even when it was happening, it was just, you know, I'm just a little girl from the hood. I was happy to be there. So, you know, if Timbaland or Missy or, you know, somebody of that caliber tells you to do, you know, this is the beat, I want you to do this, you're going to listen. Because, it's no argument there. It's, they know what they're doing. Listen to them. Let's do it. Let's rock out that way.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, when it didn't happen the way they expected, because I really had no expectations because I was still young and I was like, okay, well, I guess this is not a good thing when I don't, you know, sell a bunch of records. Let's try it another way. So that's really what was going on in my mind.
Okay. And I want to dig in a bit to the idea of writing radio songs, because that was new to you at that
yes.
point, right?
Yes.
What was that like?
It was, to me, well, I had to learn to write radio songs. So I would get the, just dumb it down a little bit. And I was like, I really didn't understand that term. And then, you know, after a while, I start getting it. Like, don't be as lyrical. Don't, you know, don't go over there and hear it too much. And like I said, it was something that I had to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
If you're put in a position where, you know, you have these big people who are not just telling the record company and, all right, we need radio songs. This is more radio friendly. That's what that's a part of the process. That's what you have to learn to do.
Sure. And one of the big things about that whole process for you, I think, was learning to rhyme over Timbaland's beats, because it's so different than traditional breakbeat stuff. It's a lot busier, things like that. What was that like? What kind of things did you have to pay attention to and change in your writing to rhyme over?
Well, when I first even got my deal, I rapped like the typical Philly artist at the time, which was Major Figures, Beanie Siegel, and we all had the same kind of flow.
Fucking with the figures, uh-huh. And y'all bitches dream about fucking with the figures. Rock a copper tone caddy, me in the cop. That shit's scary. Sometimes I feel ahead of myself. I hear this voice in the back of my mind. Like Mac, maintain, just grind, all better yourself. So what I do,
the hun in the race, the dun, 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 dun. It was the same kind of pattern. And so Tim taught me, I remember us being in the studio in L.A., sitting on the floor, like Indian style. I was like, I can't get it. And he was like, you know, listen to the drums, listen to certain drums and just go to, you know, different patterns and different flows. Mm-hmm. He would come get me from my hotel room and say, if you can get this flow, I'll give you $300. And to me, that was like, what? So, you know, he was just giving me tests on how to get the flow right.
Mm-hmm.
So, he definitely taught me how to flow on different beats, and especially on his, and with, you know, just not the same flow all the time. Like I said, he taught me to listen to certain drum patterns that, you know, the typical person wouldn't rap to.
Yeah. And I want to dig in that. You talked about that Philly style. How would you describe that? What makes sort of Philly rap?
I think really the Philly rap is to me is the rawness. The rawness and the pureness is like, it comes from like hunger and struggle and hate and, you know, to me, a lot of the people in Philly, when they rhyme, they really like, it's like home of the spitters. Like you can't just come with some bullshit. Like you can't, it's just hunger and a pain to me. And just Philly is like, who's better than, and, that's really, but I think really being a lyricist from Philly, you want to be more lyrical than the next person. And like I said, they're hunger and they all right, but such and such is better. So it's just always that, you know, trying to get to that next level and trying to be better than the next person.
Yeah. And who are some people from Philly who you came up with, or even from like the previous generation, who never kind of got the national look that you think they deserved?
The national look. I mean, there's tons of people in Philly I can say that I came up with. To me, like Petey Crack, who was a part of State Property, I think he is like super dope, even with his style and his flows, his song contents, his delivery.
Shout out to my youngin', all he know is stuntin'. He just turned 10, he told me Ralph Lauren's nothing. He said, Daddy, buy and sell me. Ferragamo smell me. So when I go to school, I'll be smoother than some bellies. Ooh, that'd be really cool. Pops, I know you feel me. And while you're at it, grab that sweater with the matching scully. Woo! It's the goose in Malibu, I call it.
Who else? Nina Ross, she's dope.
Strapped up tight, had to handle that business. Ride around in that dope feet, rent it to tuck real low. Can't see who wear that thing, bisexual. Both y'all can get it. In my rear view, showing out, coming near you. Good Gucci frames on, keep it clear for you. Beware them suckers that fear you. I can't.
It's just a lot of Philly artists, yeah. Period, that you're like, hey, I wish they can get a, you know, I wish they can get a shot.
Yeah. And which Philly artists were you listening to when you were sort of coming up and learning how to rap?
It was, you know, the Beanie Siegels, the Chris and Neves, the Black Thoughts, even when I was younger, EST, people like that.
Okay. You know, after Girl Interrupted, you know, the first major project you did after that was the Million Dollar Baby mixtape.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so that sounds, honestly, like a lot more aggressive and a lot more angry, like you're talking about, has a little more of that Philly rawness than the album.
I'm the young Cinderoni from the town that's nice. Fuck with me, you hand me intro life. Lights out, trick. It ain't about who
own suit. I'm my fucking own click hole. Shit.
What accounts for that difference?
I think because I was so like, I went through a period after Girl Interrupted where I felt like I wanted to be as, like, you know, I'm not like a cookie cutter. So I wanted to show that. And then I listened to it and I was like, this is a little bit too rough. Like, wait a minute. So I think even with Million Dollar Baby, it was me. I got to just do me, how I would do me. I feel like it was a little rough, but it wasn't so rough like I'm gonna shoot you in the head rough. You know what I'm saying? It was like, maybe I'll punch you instead of shoot you. So, you know, so yeah, I think that, like, because I wanted to prove, like, I'm just not get your big head on the floor. I actually have lyrics and, you know.
Yeah. And that came out, you know, that was done with the affiliates with Drama
and
Don Cannon.
Yeah.
And it came out at somewhat of an awkward time, and that it was right around the time they got raided and stuff.
Yes, yes, yes.
Donald Cannon, known as DJ Cannon, and Tyrese Simmons, known as DJ Drama, are accused of bootlegging thousands of CDs for sale on the internet. Fulton County SWAT team and officers from Clayton County raided DJ Drama's Gangsta Grills recording studio last night. Among the items seized, 50,000 counterfeit CDs, recording equipment, computers, cars, cash, and bank statements. The two were.
Yes. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, really? I can't catch a fucking break, but yeah.
So that happened, like, right as your tape was being released? How did that affect?
Like, it seemed like it might have been the same day. And I'm like, are you serious?
Oh, man. So all those copies never quite made it out to the.
No.
Oh, man. So. Moving back to the beginning of your career, I was curious about, like, where did the name Miss Jade come from in the first place?
A video game. And I'm so, like, it's either Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. I think it's Mortal Kombat. Jade.
This will be easy.
Jade. I remember being in a corner store around the corner from me, and I just liked the name, and I was like, I'm gonna be Jade, and I just, like, it was, that's who I am, and I couldn't use just Jade because of the group Jade, so I had to figure it out, and I was like, okay, well, I am over 18, I am grown now, so I put the Miss on it, and that's how it came, Miss Jade.
Nice. Did you have any rap names before that?
No.
That was a big one.
Yeah, that was it.
Wow.
And it was so weird because it just stuck. Like, it just, like, it was like I literally made Miss J. Like, that's who I am. And that was it. Yeah.
And so I know when you were deciding to do music, it was, you know, I think you're maybe late teens, somewhere around there. And it was actually listening to NDRE, of all people, that kind of inspired you to really move in that direction. Why?
Well, what happened was I was doing it. I started rapping and doing cyphers, and I never thought that I could be a rapper. Like, I never thought. I just knew I was good at it. I knew that I could do it, but just because of doing the cyphers and, you know, people saying, like, you're dope. I never thought that I could take it as far as to getting an album and getting a deal. And then, you know, I had a couple people like, yo, you should take this serious. And so once I said, all right, you know what, maybe I can take this thing a little serious. So once I did that, I had told my parents, and they was like, mm-mm, like, regular job, that's what you need. Like, a rapper, how are you going to be, like, what do you mean? Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be a rapper. And so that kind of, like, it kind of broke my heart because my mom was like, I felt like she didn't believe in me. But now, as you know, as I got older, having that conversation with her was like, you know, it was like, I just wanted you to be safe in what you did. But at that time, I was like, you know, I remember, like, it was like a sad video. I was sitting outside in the rain, and one of my friends was like, yo, listen to this song. Like, you need this song, because I was like devastated. And I listened to this song, and it changed my life. It just changed this. I didn't care what anybody thought. I didn't care, you know, how hard it was going to be. It was just.
And that song, that was Strength, Courage, and Wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. Procrastination had me down. Look what I have found. Strength, courage, and wisdom. It's been inside of me all along. So even when I listen to it now, I get all misty-eyed.
that brings me actually to something about singing, which I wanted to ask you, because I know you kind of grew up both singing and rapping, you know, singing even at like talent shows and things, singing Janet Jackson songs and things like that. Can you, what do you remember about doing that?
I just remember, like, I was always the kid that wanted to sing in the talent shows and knock on people's door, hey, you want to have a talent show? And I was that kid all the time. And just growing up in a house, my mom playing Phyllis Hyman and Anita Baker and, you know, people like that, that's what made me want to, I thought I was going to be a singer before I thought I was going to be a rapper anyway. So that's what really made me want to do it. So I was, my house was filled with music all the time. Like, you know, the clean up, we had music. The wake up, we had music. We, you know, R&B and Luther was playing. So that's really where I got that from. And, I started singing in groups when I was younger, and that was something I always felt like it was just natural for me. It was just like I would go to I was in performing arts camps and, you know, like I said, little talent shows, and it was just normal for me.
And then it's only recently on a couple of your recent freestyles that you've started to sort of bring singing back.
Right.
What inspired you to do that?
I don't know. I was pitching for so long. Like, I was like, I don't want nobody to know I can sing. And I mean, because I feel like I can hold the note on a good day. But now I'm like, all the singers can hold the note on a good day. Nowadays, most of them.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, well, I feel like God didn't give me certain talents for me not to use them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not going to belt out Patti LaBelle or Beyonce, but I could give you a note or two. So why not use it?
Mm, nice. And as far as rapping goes and influences, I wanted to ask you about Big Daddy Kane, because, you know, you remade Set It Off with him.
Hey, yo, Jade, you setting it off for real? But dig this. This the Kane, I gotta vent some on this. Hey yo, I was granted the lead. Kick you from an amateur breed, enchanted with greed, and trying to bite the hand of the feet. Brooklyn, I first planted the seed. Want the job done right, I'm the man that you need.
And then when you and some other folks redid the symphony, you took the Kane spot, and you know, you paid homage to one of his punchlines on there and
exactly.
stuff.
And battling me is hazardous to help. So put a quarter in your ass, cause you played yourself like a game in the arcade. I'm walking the path that a law made. Still got it like a major belt. So put a cord in your ass because you played yourself. Keep it cute, fall back. Can you talk a bit about Kane? Was he a particularly big influence on you? I think that, because around the time of, like, when I wasn't really rapping, I was just, I guess, just loving it. Like, just, you know, sitting in front of Yo MTV Raps and Rap City Indian Style in my grandma's house, watching, you know, EPMD and KRS-One and Kane. And Kane always had this, he gives me the same aura that Jay-Z gives you, like a commanding, like, chill but boss type of, you know, aura. So I think that Kane just always stuck out to me. And he, you know, he never was on no nutty shit. He just was always, you know, come through, do his job, get out of there. And he was like a showman, but still like smooth. So I think that resonated with me anyway, some kind of way.
Huh. What was it like to redo one of his iconic songs with him on it?
It was nuts, because he came to Philly and we wound up doing this song in a studio basement at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I was asleep. And Charlie Mack called me and said, yo, Kane.
Wait, Charlie Mack of Charlie Mack First Out the Limo fame?
Yes. Creed is a sucker. Charlie Mack could be Drago. He could bench about 300 pounds. The cops all take a vacation when Charlie's in town. He's the toughest around, so everywhere that I go, he goes. He's Charlie Mack, and he's the First Out the Limo. Charlie Mack, First Out the Limo. So he, like, I think you should do the joint. And I already had some of it wrote, but once I didn't know that he was going to come and get on it, because I was like, oh my goodness, so I gotta really come. So when I did it, he came in, and I really couldn't believe that he came to this basement studio with me, and we did it. He was like, yo, you killed this, sis. And I was like, that was it.
Right, that's what else you need to hear.
That was it.
Nice. And so the remake of the symphony, which you did with a former guest of the show, Derek Angeletti, in the Marley Marl role.
Yo, this the mad rapper, and I don't care who first or who last. All I want to know who giving me some ass at the drop of a dime, baby.
How did that come about?
Well, actually, D Dot called me and asked me to do it, and I was like, for D Dot, anything. Yeah, that's my guy. So he was like, you know, I want you to do this song, you know, with these other three females. I think it'd be, you know, dope for Philly. And I'm like, all right, whatever D Dot asked me to do, I pretty much, you know, it's D Dot.
Right.
So we did it, and it came out cool. It came out cool.
Yeah. So I know you were on a few mixtapes and stuff before your first album came out. Do you remember the first song of yours that was on a mixtape? I think maybe it was with Beanie.
I think the first one was with Beanie. I think it was the Black Friday mixtape.
Man, I'm sickening, and I ain't even bring it yet. I'm shining on cats, and I ain't even bling it yet. Crazy hooks, and I ain't even swing it yet. Laying it down for the game, and y'all don't want to bet. Block with it. Wait,
let me clear that up. And it was like my first time doing a mixtape, I remember. Wow. And when I used to do freestyles all the time, or even like when I first started, and I still kind of do it sometimes, like I would pray because I was so nervous and timid. So I would be like, excuse me, can you give me a minute? I go in the bathroom and pray like, God, please let me just kill this freestyle. And then it always worked out for me somehow. It's so weird. It always did. And I do it when I get on stage all the time. So I remember vividly doing that freestyle. And then after that, then we did, I got on a couple of Clue mixtapes with Set It Off and some other joints. And that was it for the mixtapes. Like, I really didn't do a lot of mixtapes. I might have did 3-4 mixtapes. And that's why after the album, I was like, let's kind of build my portfolio up. Like, let's take it from the streets.
Yeah, I guess, not that what happened with Timberland was a bad thing, but do you ever regret that you didn't have that kind of building time of kind of like doing all the, you know, all the Clues and all this kind of stuff for a longer period?
I mean, I did, but now, because I'm older, I know that, you know, everything happens for a reason. Maybe it was, apparently it wasn't meant for my life and my journey to happen like that.
Right.
So, but I know at that time I was like devastated. Like, maybe I should have did this. I mean, you know, after everything happens and you're by yourself in your house, it's just like, what could I have done different?
Right. So before your album, you put out Dream, the single. There are a couple questions about that. The first is like, literally the first words on it are a Biggie homage, right? Or a Biggie quote.
Who the fuck is this? Paging me at 5:46 in the morning. Crack the door.
Who the hell is this? Paging me at 4:56 in the morning. Crack a dawning. Now I'm yawning. Wipe the cold from my eyes. See who's this paging me and why. It's my girl Yvonne from the hair salon. Told me she was down the club last night. Shit wasn't seeming too right. These bitches hopping out of Hondas and Galots talking greasy out their lips. Act as if they won't get popped.
Was there any kind of message or feeling behind having like the first words on your first single be like an homage to Biggie, or is that just sort of how it worked out?
It just sort of just worked out like that. And Tim used to always say, like, you like a girl big mixed with Jay. Like, he used to always say that all the time. And so I think that that's where the idea for to come up with doing that song and, you know, that Dream and everything, like, we were just in the studio messing around, and he came up with it. And I was like, okay, this is giving me, you know, some big shit.
So, yeah. And that song, you know, you say in there, you sort of express a little worry about how sort of quickly things happened for you. You have the line about, like, they're saying I'm getting too much shine because of how I came up.
Right.
They said I'm getting too much shine, how I came up, how I switched from the loom to the Benz truck, how I fuck with Lisa's.
Was there actual like pushback you were getting at that point from
Absolutely.
People?
Yeah. I mean, especially coming from where I'm from, it was just like, I remember at one point I got my Hummer. I had a Hummer, and it was like I was like the first person with a Hummer. And I came outside, and all four of my tires were slashed. And it was just like, wait, man, who would do that? But that's, you know, it was word around the neighborhood, like, you know, people felt some kind, because it was people who was doing it longer than me. They felt like I didn't deserve it. And, you know, where she come up from, you know, where she come from.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. And while you were getting stuff together for that record, I know it was a little bit like a boot camp with all mm-hmm. all of the artists Tim was working with at the time.
Right.
What was that like? What would kind of a typical day be like in that situation?
It was so weird. It was like just sleeping from like 9 until 12. And then 12, I would write, what I had to prepare for to get to the studio. Or I would start and then finish at the studio. And then I would go to the studio from 6 at night in the evening to 6 in the morning. And yeah, a car would come get me. I would go there and it would be everybody in their own room. And, you know, you just knocking them out. And, you know, the runners like run to the store for you. And, you know, they're coming give you, Missy wants you to do this verse on this song. And Tim wants you to do this verse on this song. And then we'll do it. Barely really seeing each other, only to, you know, to check in and nod and, you know, vibe and then go home and do it again.
Wow.
And do it again and do it again. Yeah.
Amazing. So there was a bunch of stuff recorded for Girl Interrupted that didn't uh-huh. make the album. What's some of the stuff left behind that you really liked? I assume, you know, not that many people have heard it. Can you describe maybe a song that got left behind that you really liked?
I think I had two that I liked. I liked at the time. It was one, it was more anthem-y, with like a crowd chant in the background. I had one, and then I had another one that me and Tim did that was kind of rock and roll-ish. We had a lot of joints that we did and just broke it down. But I think that we picked some of the and I had a few more street joints that I really wanted but couldn't get on the album.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a few of them on the record, yeah. Definitely recorded more. Step Up on that record is obviously, you know, pays respect to Top Billin.
Uh-huh.
So step up if you wanna get hurt. Milky's gonna pull this skirt. I get money.
Which I thought was cool. What made you want to shout out that song?
That is the era that I like most. You know, me being a big fan of MC Light and Queen Latifah, that just, you know, that it just reminded me of being in a, you know, in a lunchroom and just flowing like how we used to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what it gave me.
That song talks about the music business being stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Think because I'm with Tim that I got it easy. But that don't stop me from smoking up in a trail beat. Staying sucker free, weed in a truck with me. This music biz keep a bitch puffing heavily. 3 a.m.
What in particular was so stressful at that point for you?
I mean, just even like I said, coming from where I'm from, I just didn't know anything about the music business. It was just, I just wanted to rap. I just wanted to be a rapper. So I didn't know about the making of radio songs and, you know, you can't talk to this DJ because this DJ don't get along or doing this drop because you need to do. I didn't know about, you know, I didn't know about all that, all those type of aspects when it came to the music business. And then, you know, you have people treating you a different way. And then, you know, people acting like they really love you when they really don't. Like, it was just a lot to me at that point. So, you know.
And one of the guest appearances you did that was probably best known was Funky Fresh Dressed.
Uh-huh.
After blunt guzzle 40s a bed. Used to swear up and down every first of the year. He was going quit smoking, but he never did.
I wanted to ask how you approached that song because of sort of how retro the whole theme is mm-hmm. and the fact that you're rapping specifically over the BC Boys beat at that point.
Right.
But, you know, so it had to have that vibe, but it also had to be you, and it also couldn't exactly sound like it came right out of 1987,
because
exactly. That would sound weird. How did you approach that song?
I really don't. I just remember me and Tim talking about it, and he's saying, like, this would be dope if you get on. Missy wants you to be a part of it. And I'm like, okay. And I always feel like, even now, I always feel like, even with the Big Daddy Kane, it's you can pay homage but you still have to maintain who you are because you want people to always recognize who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, just me throwing in a, please do not try to fuck with this young buck. Please do not try to fuck with this young buck. Like, all that kind of stuff was just, like, to add the newer part to what was going on, you know, with the Beastie Boys. I had a little homie named Paul. All that kind of stuff. So it was just, like, just trying to put in newer stuff. Like, I remember, like, what can I put in? And I put in, a couple bottles of Hypnotic.
In the back of the ride. Might spit like a girl, but I hit like a guy.
Because Hypnotic had just came out. So right. It was just like, you always have to try to mix the old with the new somehow.
Yeah. So, you know, you did the Million Dollar Baby mixtape. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there was the Straight No Chaser tape, which again has some of that like sing rap approach a little bit that you were talking about on Regular and things like that. You have that song Rolling Through the Town. And on it, you pay tribute to a friend who is deceased. I think the name was Rye.
Ryan.
Who was that?
That was like my best friend. Yeah. So she got murdered, and it was just like after that happened, it was a time where I felt like I'm done. Like I didn't really not I'm just done with life for a minute. So then you know I had a really bad car accident where I almost died. So I think that was like, you know what, maybe you should take a minute, but get back on your ship because you could have been gone and I could have been with her. You know, it was just so many things that was just like,
right.
Wait a minute. So, yeah. So I think that, I mean, and she was like a super big fan of me, like, Jay, we need to do this. We need to do that. So I feel like every time I do something now, it's like, you know, like it's for her because she didn't really get to live out her dreams like she wanted to. And, yeah, that's really...
Wow. And so the accident, I know, was a big deal, and that's kind of going to come through on some stuff on Beautiful Mess, yeah. Right? You're actually writing about that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's it like to turn such a huge event like that into a couple lines on a song? Is that strange at all?
No. It just seems like... I mean, because I usually try to... When I do get into talking about my life, I talk about my life.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not nothing sugar-coated. So it's pretty easy to say what happened when it really happened.
Right. You do that also on the song Kiss Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, one of your more sort of open and introspective songs. And it deals even with the idea of, oh, I can't get a regular job because then people will see me and they'll say, Miss Jade's working as a restaurant hostess. Yeah, and it'll be, you know, in the tabloids. First of all, I assume that's an actual worry you had at some point, or maybe still have.
Yeah, because it's just like, I mean, you know, the music business is shaky, and especially when you grinding and you humping for so many years, it's just like, oh, should I just get a regular job? And you know, but then it's like, I can't get a regular job, but I can't. Like, this is the only thing I feel like I know how to do when it comes to rapping and even just writing R&B or pop or whatever. Like, this is. I mean, I know I probably can do other things, but I want to be fulfilled in life. So I just, you know, I worked at the Gap. I worked at Old Navy. I hated it. Like, yeah.
Speaking of, you know, clothes and things of that nature, I read, you know, maybe in an old bio of yours that you used to, when you were a kid, sell handbags, knockoff handbags.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I would come to New York to Canal Street and get fake Fendi, fake Gucci, fake, and I'll double the price, and people would knock on my door, and thank you. Thank you, come again.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's been a great hustle while it lasted.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's amazing. Back in 07, there was a little... stuff going back and forth between Timbaland and Scott Storch and all of that.
In 2007, producer Scott Storch was angered by what he felt was Timbaland taking lyrical shots at him on the song Give It To Me, where Timbo called an unnamed producer, quote, just a piano man. The bad feeling supposedly dated back to arguments the two had over credit on Justin Timberlake's 2002 hit Cry Me a River. Diss songs and insults on stage and in the media flew back and forth for several months.
I'm a real producer and you just a piano man. Your song don't pop the charts. I heard them. I'm not a fan.
You jumped in with a pretty vicious diss song that addressed a lot of rumors about Scott's drug problems at the time.
You got yourself a little cocaine habit. Dick stay limp, take too much Viagra. The weak ass pop shots served. If I recall, you said I was the best you heard. You ain't no balls, you ain't got no balls. I get you banged up, and niggas grab your keys and break all your piano fingers. Scotty, you got nerve, you a snake and you foul. I know about that beat you stole from the poor 100 miles. It was still Drake.
I jumped in because Timbaland asked me to jump in.
Ah,
that's the first thing.
Okay.
Because I wasn't, you know, he asked me to jump in, so I jumped in.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what happened?
He just called me out of the blue one day and told me to listen to this song. And he was like, he talking about you. He was like, you know, hyping it up. And I'm like, he talking about me. He was like, yeah, so what you going to do? I was like, what you think I should do? And then, you know, it went to, that's how we got the diss song.
Wow. Have you heard from Scott Storch since then? No?
No.
He hasn't tried rapping since then. No. So something must have worked.
That was it. And I was like, I shouldn't even got into that because, but it was fun.
Yeah. So over the past maybe 2 years or so, you've had a whole bunch of freestyles that you've released. What's been the idea behind making those available?
It's just, you know, when people, I think that a lot of people need to know what I'm doing. Well, they ask me, like, a lot of people like the freestyle series. So it's just like building up into Beautiful Mess. So I want them, it's really just for them to start paying attention. Like, I wonder, Jay come back? Jay came back? And, you know, you get to see visuals. You get to hear, you know, me over, like, some of the newer beats.
Luxury a minute is all up in my crib. You be leaving in a stretcher, try running my crib.
Some of the older beats. It's just really giving the people what they want because they've been asking, like, when you going to drop something or when I drop a freestyle. And then it had a lot to do with social media. I would do little clips and people like, I want to hear the whole thing, or, you know what I'm saying? So that's really what it came from.
Yeah. And one of the things you released was the Thelma & Louise track with Nina Ross.
Yes.
Any hope of a full duet album?
We've been trying to do this whole album for a minute, but we just came to the conclusion that we're just going to just do it, get it out, because, you know, even when it comes to feet, like, she's my favorite, I'm her favorite, and we just mesh well together. I think, you know, she has her own audience, I have mine, and two dope girls, like, what's better than that?
Yeah. And you've talked about how you have kind of perfectionist tendencies that can maybe get in the way of you actually releasing music. Uh-huh. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with the album not doing as good as I thought. So it's just, I'm always like, I don't want it to, in my head, sometimes it's just like, I want it to be right. I want it to be perfect. Knowing that nothing is always going to be right. Nothing is always going to be perfect. But I think, that kind of scarred me a little bit. Like, I don't want to come out and it just be a dud. But, I mean, keep on pushing. But, you know, in the back of my head, it's just like, oh, my goodness. I'm human. So, yeah.
And so how are you trying to kind of battle those tendencies of tweaking stuff until it's perfect or adding songs until you have, you know, the right one?
It's an everyday struggle. I just try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with Beautiful Mess, what does the title mean?
Like, even stuff like this, like the fact that I feel like I'm a perfectionist, or I don't, you know, sometimes I'm a mess. Sometimes I'm all put together. Sometimes I'm, you know, sometimes I'm a crybaby. Sometimes I'm a thug. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm a bitch. Sometimes I'm sweet. Like, I'm a mess. I'm a mess. My whole, everything is a mess, but it's my mess. Mm-hmm. It's what makes me who I am. So that's beautiful to me. It's, you know, I'm living in my truth when it comes to, like, the beautiful mess thing.
And you've had been getting, you know, moving from rap into, you know, pop songwriting also. Uh-huh. I know you've worked with Miley Cyrus and some other artists recently. Uh-huh. How is pop songwriting different than writing raps?
It's so crazy because I feel like I can write a pop song in 5 minutes. And I have no idea where it came from. It just came just like with the rhymes. They just come. So I don't know. It's just a gift, I guess. But I think that maybe like the melodies and stuff like that is maybe a little bit simpler, a little bit more. And then because I listen to a lot of pop, I listen to all kinds of music, but maybe because, you know, that has an influence on me being able to write pop songs and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
And this is something I've been curious with people who, you know, both sing and rap, is like the approach to the words is so different. Like in a rap song, the lyrical approach is so different. It's more specific. It's obviously right. more words. So yes. you have more to say. Can you talk about that a little bit for a second, specifically thinking about like writing lyrics for pop songs versus raps?
Yeah, well, of course, it's definitely more words. And just even with, well, I think the beat kind of tells you what to do. So, you know, if you get like a happy up tempo beat or something that's really poppy, even though you can go in on it, but I just think it's whack. Like if you, you know, try to do a rap song over a pop song. And I just think that it's just easier to me, just like I said, like with the, you know, the melody, and then it's simpler, mm-hmm. basically.
On Girl Interrupted, you had that song Different, mm-hmm. that I think, you know, was towards the end and was mm-hmm. one of the more kind of like serious or introspective things. And towards the end of that, you talk about like double standards, right? Mm-hmm. Different double standards for women versus men, mm-hmm. blacks versus whites.
If a nigga got girls, then he considered a pro. But if a girl got niggas, then she considered the hoe. And if a white person hang around blacks, he a wigger. And if a black person hang around whites, he a nigga. And if we try to make it out together, we a sellout. Pressure gets so deep at times, I want to yell out.
Was there like one thing you saw that kind of pushed you over the edge and was like, okay, well, I'm going to work this into a song? Or was it just sort of a culmination of things?
No, it was a combination of things. Like, I think that, you like, I've never been, I don't like people being prejudiced against other people. And then I had a lot of friends that's gay, and you know what I'm saying? Like, or just me not maybe fitting in all the time with the typical teens when I made that song. It just was like, you know, you hear whispers and you hear people talking about, you know, just being prejudiced towards people and judging them. It just was like, yo, you're allowed to be different. You know, you don't have to, everybody does not have to be the same.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, that's, well, I know that's where that came from. And it just was like, and even after I did it, like now people still talk about it to this day. Like that song changed my life. I'm like, I really didn't, I was just doing it because that's what I was feeling at the time. But I didn't know that, you know, a lot of people were getting bullied and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But this one guy wrote me this long post saying that he graduated from high school because of that. And he was, you know, like a lot of people picked on him because he was gay. And he was like I would listen to this song every morning. I'm like, wow, that's dope. So.
Yeah, awesome. One of the things that comes up in basically every interview with you, and I can kind of see your eyes start to glaze over already, is this idea that like, you know, you had a certain style of fashion uh-huh. and then that you know, Missy adopted it and, mm-hmm. you know, there were complications around that because she was better known and so forth.
Uh-huh. I've also heard Missy Elliott swagger jacked you.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Whoa!
Yes.
Whoa!
Yes.
Tell us how.
Clearly. When I first came out, I gave my persona was like the around the way girl, the Adidas sweatsuits, the bamboo earrings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She took that
and ran with
and
it.
And ran all the way down the street with it. And you know, coming a new artist is looking like I'm copying from her, but
right,
actually,
right. Yeah.
It was the other way around.
I remember the very famous picture of you with the baseball hat sideways.
She took the exact same picture.
Yeah.
Exact same picture.
With the lollipop and the whole nine.
Exactly.
So if I understand you correctly, here on the Storm and Buck Wallace Show, you've just said Missy Elliott swagger jacked you.
Missy Elliott swagger jacked me.
You know, you've obviously talked about that a ton. I guess just what is it like to make one comment, you know, during an interview, presumably when you were, yeah, when you were, you know, angry and things were still raw.
Right.
And then 10 years later, you know, here comes people bringing it up all the time as if you just said it.
Right. It's I mean, it is what it is. I said it. It's done.
Right.
Me and her talked about it. It's done.
Right.
So, It's going to come up. It's the issue. So it's going to come up.
Right.
It's a headache, but it is what it is. Like, I mean, I said it. I can't go back and say, you know, please don't ask me that because I said it.
Mm-hmm.
It's written.
Right. Is there anything else you wish they were asking you about that kind of period or your relationship with her or whatever instead?
Of course. There's so many other things you can ask. But, yeah. You know, we live in a world where we like drama and... You know, dirt, and that's kind of what that was, a little bit.
Right, right. And I heard that you sort of found out that Jay was going to be on Count It Off as a surprise.
Yes.
How was that? What story there?
That was like nuts. That was like the craziest time of my life. Like, that was like fucking bananas. We were in the studio. Was we at Quad? Yeah, we weren't at Quad. We was at Manhattan Center. And I did a lot of my album there. And I did the song. And Tim was like, hey, I got something for you to listen to. So we listening to it. And I had three verses on the song already. And so I'm like, oh, okay. He did some mixes in here. It's cool. Sound dope. Little drops. And all I hear is, I was like,
it's Young Vito, voice of the young people, rock CEO, hot piss for the P.O. I'm so trill on wood paneling, handling meals, 20-inch jumpers from standing on my wheels. They can't understand it, goddammit, he's ill.
What? So I was like, wait, I had to make him stop it and everything, like, wait a second, wait. Come on with the get down. I got up, start running, screaming at you crazy. Yo, I think we listened to this song maybe 100. Man, did we listen? We listened to that song 100 times on the way back to Philly. Like, I was like, get the fuck out of here. Then he told me the story of how he did it. He did it, laid it, and was like, this is crazy. This is dope. Went out, went to a party, came back, and relayed his verse because he felt like my verse was better than his. Yeah.
Wow.
Nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But I think I still listen to it as many times as I can, just back the bit. Like, what? As soon as I heard
happened.
I was like screaming. Tim was just laughing like, happy birthday. Because he was telling me like, he might not do it because he don't do, you know, he don't do songs with females and yada yada. I'm like, all right. So I already had it in my head he wasn't going to do it.
Right. I assume it was something you mentioned him during the album process. Like, hey, if you could, you know,
Yeah, it would be dope if he got on and he was like, he might not. Like, and he just brushed it off. And I was like, that's not even a thought.
Right.
Yeah. The best feeling ever.
Yeah. Well, speaking of best feelings, how'd you feel when you heard, you know, Beyonce reference one of your songs?
What about your ching, ching, ching? What about your bling, bling, bling? So what you spent up all your money today?
It's just consumer. What about that ching, ching, ching? What about that ching, ching, ching? Baby boomers. Baby. Cyclical trends. Trying to fit in.
That was nuts. So,
tunes, yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, did she just say, what about, what? Yeah, that was dope. It was dope.
You had no idea that was going to happen.
Nice.
How did there end up being sort of two takes on Ching 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 on the album? The kind of part one and part two.
I think just he just had the, he was like, we need to do a remix. And we just did it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Nelly Furtado was on that song, right? Mm-hmm. Were you around when she recorded, or was that,
Well, I actually opened up for Nelly. So we already had that that connection, and he asked her to do a hook for me, and she did it. And yeah, that's how that happened.
Nice. And I do have to ask about someone very close to you, Burgundy Jones. Can you tell me?
What?
Tell me who that is.
Oh, you was doing your research. Research. I would have never thought you would ask me that. That's so funny. Yeah, that's just like my alter ego, my alter pop girl.
Any chance of her recording?
I definitely want to. Yeah. I definitely want to. That's in the works.
Nice. And so, what can we expect from Beautiful Mess? What's it going to sound like?
I think that, like, when we were talking about, you know, just mixing the R&B with the pop, just honest, and you know, just touching on different things that's happening in my life, you know, as a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got some fun joints, some serious ones, and I just wanted to be honest and just show how much of a mess I am, but I'm beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, you did the Feeling It freestyle over the Jay-Z verse, obviously, or the Jay-Z beat, obviously. On that song, you have a line about how your father was your hero.
Grew up with my father, and in him, I felt the hero. Saw the chance of niggas disrespecting, that'd be a zero. Man, I'm killing it.
How did you mean that? Why?
Just, I feel like, you know, a lot of women who don't have fathers in their lives maybe look for their father figure in a man. And, you know, and sometimes it ends well, it doesn't end well. Like, so I think because I had my dad around and, you know, to protect me and to steer me in the right direction, I went in the right direction.
You've been doing a bunch of videos for the freestyles. Who's been directing them? What's kind of the idea behind having them all sort of, I assume, in Philly, uh-huh, right? Kind of street scene,
yeah,
type
well,
stuff?
Well, it's just like, you know, just throw it, because it's a freestyle, so we're not doing, like, you know, a big production. It's just right. Freestyle. It's just just a visual. So even if I'm just I'm sitting down, and then it's just like similar to like if I would record on do videos on Instagram or whatever. It's just having a visual out for, mm-hmm, you know, so people can see me, and yeah. I think that visuals connect well with, you know, with freestyle or what videos or music anyway now. So even if it's just a short video, it's just I got this guy named DS who's we just rock. Like, if I do a freestyle, let's put a video out. Do a freestyle, let's put a video out. So that's what we've been doing.
How do you end up choosing which beats to rhyme over?
Sometimes it can be like I can be out and I'll be like, oh, this beat popping. Or, you know, somebody can say, I think you could kill Feeling It free, you know, I think you can kill Wicked, or I think you can kill, you know. So it's just, and sometimes it's a challenge. Like, I just did, the Kanye joint over.
Like, all night, all day, wasn't really about nothing. Wale, 18, got a deal like Wame, 30 plus on my fucking fucking low trauma. Hope killer, Q still spit bananas like a gorilla. No money, no talk, we got no business. Miss kill anything, leaving no witness.
And it was like, how do you come off on it? And
I
was
like, all day?
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you just come off. Sometimes you come off how they come off, or you throw your own little thing in it. And it's just like practice, really.
Nice. And so I guess, you know, what else is going on with you? Beautiful Mess. Any idea when it might be finished or out in the world?
It'll be finished in 2016. It'll be done.
Okay. Yeah.
And I just did a short film called Nakia.
This is a personal journey of a female MC who's been locked up for 15 years. And when she gets out of jail, she notices that technology has changed. The whole world has changed with technology, but the hood is still the same.
My name is Miss J, and I'm playing the role of Nakia, a female rapper with a speech impediment, but she doesn't have a speech impediment when she rhymes. She's like a beast when she rhymes. But
city, you all talk, I'm all action. I'm just asking,
Who the fuck sent Bull? Put his remains in a box, getting sent for.
Oh.
Yorkie nigga try to tangle with a pit bull. Backwards ass nigga, you don't walk into some shit, bull.
I'm just really trying to get into the acting thing too, so I'm available.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a great spot to end. Miss Jade, thank you so much for
coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
In talking to Miss Jade, one thing that comes through is that if you're an artist, getting discovered is the beginning rather than the end of your journey. It was educational for me to see a situation in which changing your style in the pursuit of commercial success ended up not exactly working out like everyone envisioned. But this new version of Miss Jade, rapping like she's always really wanted to, is a compelling artist. I've been loving her recent freestyles and am very much looking forward to her new album. And I'm hoping after hearing about her vision for Beautiful Mess, you are as well. Join us next week when our guest will be Adisa Banjoko. Adisa is the head of the Hip Hop Chess Federation. He has a new book, Bobby, Bruce, and the Bronx, The Secrets of Hip Hop Chess. He's also been in the news lately for publicly severing his ties with the Zulu Nation due to their handling of sexual abuse allegations against Afrika Bambaataa. We'll talk about all of that and plenty more. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program and help us out with as little as a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything relating to the podcast, playlists, or complete archives, and more can be found at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
Don't be as lyrical. Don't go over there and hear it too much.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
And I came outside and all four of my tires were slashed.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
If you can get this flow, I'll give you $300.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
You know, I worked at The Gap. I worked at Old Navy. I hated it.
Thanks to our latest Patreon supporter, Dame Grease.
It's just a gift, I guess.
Special thanks to Chandra Sims for making this episode happen.
And I was like, this is a little bit too rough. Like,
we'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Yes, yes. I'm like, wait a minute, what?